Blog Talk Radio.
We're going hopping, hop. We're going hopping today. When things are popping, pop. I feel the Delphi wave. We're going to drop it, pop. On all the music they play on the bandstand. We're going swinging, swing. We're going to swing in the crowd. I will be clinging, swing. And floating high as a cloud. The phones are ringing, swing. My mom and dad are so proud. I'm on bandstand.
Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
Oh, the humanity. Oh.
Harry had a little lamb. It was quite a snow. And everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
Ah!
I never once said, Nagada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
And good evening to you. 2 minutes after the hour right here on Risa on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com. You know what the day is? It's April the 18th, 2012. Hump day. A wild Wednesday, if I may say. News is everywhere. Everywhere, any place you can look, any place you want to look, you can find news. And let me begin the show by saying, I tell him, baby, my cash money. Oh, if you don't know what I'm talking about, man. All you have to do is read the New York Times article online. I tell him, baby, my cash money. That's what the hooker said. That was the line that started it all. I tell him, baby, my cash money. Oh, the hooker scandal. Oh, man, they talked to the hooker that started it all in the New York Times. And you've got to read the article yourself. You can actually just log on to drudgereport.com and look at the article yourself. And you can read her line. I tell him, baby, my cash money. That's what the Colombian prostitute said. And she says she doesn't like to be called a prostitute. She is a call girl. She says she is, it's like a different thing. She says she equates her prostitution like BlackBerry and iPod versus a streetwalker. She's the Egg McMuffin of prostitutes. If you know the commercial, you know what I'm talking about. You told me this is the Egg McMuffin of apartment. She's the Egg McMuffin. I'm sorry. I can't help it. I'm sorry, it's funnier than I can even talk about. But we'll get into that later. I'll read the report just so I can laugh at it because it is a hilarious story. Three Secret Service men are already out. Two have already retired. I think one resigned. It's gone to such proportions. But I got to take some time out to remember an icon. It's always sad when you see somebody that you kind of feel you grew up with pass away. Again, as all deaths do, you always have to sort of think about your own mortality, as we always do. I mean, most people do that. I know I do. I couldn't think of anybody who didn't. The legendary icon, Dick Clark, has passed. And I'll be honest. We talked about him not so long ago. And I have to admit, I kind of ripped on ABC for bringing him out a couple of years ago, one of his last appearances after he had his stroke. And, you know, he spoke in a very, it was not only hard to watch, but I almost felt like it was cruel and unusual punishment for a guy like that. You really want him to go out on a high note, not in that capacity. You want to remember him a certain way. You know, it was like Johnny Carson. You didn't see Johnny Carson at the end of the line. And you don't. Even though you saw Ed McMahon, even, you know, you kind of saw him when he, you know, was going through hard times, financial times, but you didn't see this guy like really at the last legs. You don't. Not guys like this. You know, some guys deserve their private moments when they've given you so much of their lives. Dick Clark got into the business when he was 29 years old back in the 50s. I wasn't introduced to him until I was a kid. I remember watching his show when I was old enough to appreciate dance and music. I have to say one of the most distinct moments I remember, just two ring out to me on American Bandstand, just to share it with you, and that was Rick James on American Bandstand, and I have to say it, even though I don't like this hag, I have to say Madonna. And the only reason why I have to mention... let's not get into why I don't like Madonna. The point is that let me tell you why I'll always remember Madonna. It's because of what she said when Dick Clark did that famous interview with her after she performed. And when he asked her, you know, what's the future hold for Madonna? And you know, or something to that effect. And I'll never forget the words she said. You know, she wanted to take over the world. That was her thing. She wanted to take over the world. And I'll never forget that. And I always say, it's like, wow, did that chick really have a beat on what she wanted for herself? And she did it on the grandest stage of all, American Bandstand. She said, I wanted to take over the world. And you can't lie. You can't front, as they say in the hood. You can't deny it. She did for a long time. Madonna, and to this day, probably... I have to admit, probably one of the most photographed women in history, with the exception of Princess Diana. And I remember that because of Dick Clark. As I said on TMZ Live earlier today, I spoke to Charles and Harvey. I said to them, look, you got to look at how relevant Dick Clark is to the modern day era. There be no TRL. There be no Soul Train. There be no. There'll be no. There'll be no 106 in Park. I think JC said to me afterwards. He said, you know, there'll be no Club MTV, which I was a part of back in 1990. There'll be no. What was that grind show? Whatever it was, but yeah, the grind on MTV that came after Club MTV. None of that would exist if not for the vision of Dick Clark. So you can't help but recognize him as, I would have to say, probably one of the biggest legend of the modern era and of pop culture. Someone I heard say today that he was culturally important, probably because he was one of the people who blended the color line. He did a lot for civil rights. In a lot of ways, and let me pretty much explain what I mean by that was Dick Clark didn't care that blacks could not be seen with whites in a dance gathering. Dick Clark didn't care. He knew that the youth drove the music. You know, what they were doing the latest dance moves. And if there was anyone who recognized the new dances that were coming to the scene were clearly coming from the African-American culture. And he wasn't the kind of guy who profited off of it. He was the kind of guy who exposed it. He let the world
embrace it.
Say again? Yes, he embraced it. Yeah, exactly, JC. That's exactly what he did. He embraced it. He brought it out. He made sure that the rest of the world saw it, that this was a part of your culture. Don't deny it. And that's what makes him an icon. You can't think of one bad thing to say about the guy. With maybe the exception of bloopers and practical jokes. But that wasn't that bad. It was okay. It was kind of hokey and corny. But, you know, the blooper reel, you know, he, you know, I have to say he kind of revolutionized that. The American Music Awards, Dick Clark Productions, and most importantly, New Year's Rockin' Eve, which, you know, hey, whatever they say, you know, in Ryan Seacrest being the new Dick Clark, I hate that whole moniker about somebody being the new, because even I do it. But that's never going to be the same. This year, at the
he's
end of
this generation.
Yeah, he's this generation. But the truth be told, when New Year's rolls around and they do New Year's Rockin' Eve this year, I expect them to do something amazing. And if I may say so, if you really, really want to do something to amaze the crowds, you know that hologram thing that they're doing?
You took the words out of my mouth.
Oh, man, you got to do it with Dick Clark, man.
You took the words out of my mouth, dude.
Send-off that would be with the phenomenon that is this Tupac hologram thing that they did over the past couple of days. Dick Clark, what a send-off that would be. You want to really, really revolutionize that whole thing, the whole hologram technology. What a fitting tribute to a guy. Hologram Dick Clark right in the middle of Times Square when the ball drops, and have Dick Clark count it down with everybody, the millions of people standing out there one last time. That would be the ultimate send-off. And so if any sons of guns out there use that idea, I just want to let you know that today, the day he died, April 18th, I was the one who suggested it first. Now,
you know what? And as Derek Bonnie Hunter wanted people to drop off the face of the earth.
What's that?
Every single citizen. And if Derek the Bounty Hunter wanted us more room on the earth, more people to drop off the earth fast enough, you pull that stunt off, every convalescent home will be empty from here to San Diego.
That would be, I'm telling you, I'm sorry, if you knew that a Dick Clark hologram was going to show up.
No, the point is, don't tell them.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, that would be a great surprise. Wouldn't that be like a King Kong-sized Dick Clark counting it off? Yeah, that would be amazing. Like this big, giant Dick Clark standing right next to the ball dropping and counting it off one last time. It would be amazing. I think it would be amazing. I think it would be quite the send-off. So.
The hologram would be amazing. I don't know about the King Kong size.
What? You don't think it would be like something? Come on, it's got to be larger than life, man.
You can't equate nothing about Dick Clark and King Kong, even a I mean, that's when you say, I'm like, no, it can't be that size.
He's, Dick Clark is a national treasure.
Yes, he is a national treasure. I agree with you. Nothing about him that equates to King Kong.
I was speaking on the grandiose part.
Well, I haven't climbed down the Empire State Building and then pushed the ball down. Wow.
Yeah, watch the ball come down.
You're going crazy.
I'm sorry. It's just he deserves that kind of a send off.
No, he does. But
that's what I'm saying. Okay, I'll admit that I'm a little over the top. But the point is, he deserves it.
I said, go for it.
If you did it for Tupac, come on now.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to do it for Dick Clark.
You have to do it for Dick Clark. I mean, you know.
If anybody deserves it, it's Dick Clark.
He does. He totally deserves it. So I just wanted to make sure that I at least mention him. I thought we'll have the audio. I'll get the audio from TMZ because I went to TMZ Live to see if I could get the audio, and it wasn't there. But I will find it. So it's only fitting to play Barry Manilow's, of course, American Bandstand, Harris the Record. The song will always be identified with Dick Clark. So we'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll get into Hooker.
We're going swinging, we're going to swing in the crowd. I will be clinging, floating high as a cloud. The phones are ringing, my mom and dad are so proud. I'm on bandstand. I'm on because I'm on beat.
things are popping. The Philadelphia way, we're gonna drop it. On all the music they play, on the bandstand. I'm making my mark. Keep this joint is jumping. They make such a fuss, just seems to ride. Hey, it's Mr. Dick Clark. What a place you got here. Well, spot the music hot here. Best in the East, give it at least a 75. Now for all you.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey, guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese. I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something. You're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekday here on blogtalkradio.com.
Exciting things are happening at Burger King.
Welcome to Burger King.
What's in those new chicken snack wraps?
Mary?
Crispy chicken, fresh lettuce, three cheeses, fresh dressing wrapped up in the tasty lava tortilla. Crispy chicken, wrapped up in
the new chicken snack wraps. Come and get it.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and let me tell you something. Nothing makes my job more perfect than interacting with you, the listeners of the Reese on the Radio show. Eric, you're on with Reese.
Hey, first of all, I want to say that you are very refreshing, my friend.
Thank you, Eric.
I do think there's too much emphasis on the race card.
Sure.
I'm sick of people who want to be treated exactly like everybody else as long as we recognize that they're different.
Yes, that's it. Chris, you're on with Reese.
Yes, hi, Reese. I just had to rebuff that guy that called you and said your arguments were weak.
Sure.
He's basing his vote on something you said, and
he's talking about my arguments weak,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, what a hypocrite. Boy, I hope he's still listening. Buddy, you're a hypocrite. You shouldn't even be allowed to vote.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. Steve, you're on with Reese.
Hey, Reese, I got to compliment you. You were wonderful handling that guy who was going to base his whole decision on something you said, which you handled it well. I think you just sealed the deal with the listeners, and you're doing a wonderful job. That's all I wanted to say.
Steve, thank you very, very much, and I appreciate that. It's Reese on the Radio right here, 8 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio. And you know, you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting. And you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on blogtalkradio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life in Congress. Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom. Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
If you're not listening to Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com, you've got no idea what you're missing. From the Daily Caller, Mr. Matthew Boyle. Matthew, thank you very much for joining us. I'm glad you took some time out for us.
Great to be here, Ray.
Who do we have on the line?
All right. This is Sean Quali, National Spokesman for Black Panther Party.
Sean Quali, thank you very much for contacting us and being on the show. For all the news and the people making news, make sure you check out Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com. 8 to 10 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, L-O-V-E-I-T.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. Okay, 22 minutes after the hour. I hate it when the clock changes right as you give the time. It's the worst thing about doing radio. You always have to catch that click right when it happens. Anyway, 22 minutes after the hour right here on Blog Talk Radio. It is April the 18th, 2012. I also have to keep looking at the calendar for some odd reason because I can't seem to remember it. Well, if you haven't been paying attention to this scandal, you've been living under a rock. And people are calling it the most embarrassing scandal of the Secret Service's history. I'm going to have to admit that, you know, look, it's the truth. Secret Service has been around since 1865. Anybody know why? Take a wild guess. Come on. 1865. Important.
No.
Really?
Really? Sorry. I'm not a history buff. I just,
it's okay. No problem. No problem.
Not my thing.
The murder of Lincoln.
There you go.
Who?
Abraham Lincoln. Anyway. Okay, so Secret Service. So the Secret Service, biggest scandal ever. So according to the New York Times went all the way down to Columbia because they love this kind of salacious stuff. And, you know, that's what the New York Times does. And they ran a reporter all the way down to Columbia. And they apparently got in touch with a taxi cab driver who then led them to the prostitute at the pretty much at the center, at the epicenter of this entire scandal.
Were there any chicken coops and
No. Not any, hey, come on, don't nothing racist, okay? Come on. Let's be a little sensitive. All right? She's a
sensitive about what?
She's
sensitive about the prostitute?
She's not a prostitute. Well, no, yes she is. She's a call girl. Now, look,
the high class whore.
Yes. She apparently is the person at the epicenter of this. Now, look, I do not want to belittle her because of the profession that she does. It's legal in Colombia. Okay?
You already belittled her.
I only belittled how she spoke. Anyway, okay, so here's the story.
Oh, okay, so that's better.
Cartagena, Colombia. A Secret Service agent preparing for President Obama's arrival at an international summit meeting and a single mother from Colombia who makes a living as a high-priced escort faced off in a room at the Hotel Caribe. Or Caribe. Look, I'm not Spanish, okay, so I'm going to do this wrong.
Hotel.
Carib? Is it the Hotel Carib?
No,
anyway.
Hotel Caribe.
Caribe. A week ago, about how much he owed her for the previous night's
intercourse.
I tell him, baby, my cash money.
No. I tell him, baby, my cash money.
Baby, my cash money. I love that. So here's the breakdown. Apparently, everyone's saying the dispute was over $47. Turns out that's not the deal. According to this story, the woman says that he approached her They were conversing. They were having a good time. It apparently led up to, hey, you want to come back to my room? A discussion was had where the woman charged him $800. He had been drinking. Apparently, they bought bottles of vodka or of some sort, some particular vodka, drank enough of it, ordered another bottle after another bottle. Everybody's getting drunk. She then goes back with him. She wakes up in the morning because there is a rule at the hotel, Caribe, that no hooker is allowed to stay at the hotel after a certain hour. I believe the hour is 6 a.m. So it's 6 a.m. Look, she's got to get up. She's got to get out the hotel because that's the rule. So that's when she taps him and she go, baby, my cash money.
Your, please, you know what?
I don't care.
You do great impressions of everything else,
I love this. I love destroying
baby,
this.
I need my cash money.
I need my cash money. Yes, exactly. So he turns around and he decides, look, I'll be honest with you. I wasn't really satisfied with the service last night. I got $30 for you. and he kicks the woman out. She bangs on another door. She gets her friend. She goes downstairs. She tells the police officer, hey, look, this guy's, he's not giving me my money. And that's how the whole thing escalates.
Listen, let me tell you something. This man upstairs, I had a good time with him last night, but he paid me $30. This is not working. I'm going to need for you to go upstairs and get my money.
So we said door easy.
He's in room 215.
215?
Come on, Carmen. You got to pay the babysitter.
What'd you say, JC?
You got to pay the babysitter.
You got to pay. But now, here's the interesting part. Here's the part that makes that actually is interesting. It turns out that they got into this whole exchange about the whole $30 thing. But the reason why she argued with him was because, okay, look, if you don't want to pay me the $800, at least give me the $250 that she has to give to, I guess, which would be, I don't want to use the word pimp, but I guess he would be. He's the guy who gets her clients. So she at least has to give him that money. So she was going to take a loss as long as she could get the $250 to pay the guy who's, in essence, her pimp.
The finder's fee.
It's not her pimp.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess it would be a finder's fee.
Well, not when you're an escort service, it's called something else.
Well, what the heck could he possibly be called?
Madam or...
Well, he's not a madam.
He's a mister?
Yeah, I guess so. Whatever. So, that's how that whole exchange. It said the hotel security guard arrived. Eventually, she lowered her demand to $250, which she said was the amount she has to pay the man who helps her find customers. Eager to resolve the matter fast, the American men eventually gave her a combination of dollars and local currency worth about $225. So he still shorted her. Now, hold on.
They made him pay.
Now, hold on. It gets better. She was dismayed, she said, when news reports described her as a prostitute, as though she walked the streets picking up just anyone. She says, now come on, do the Spanish accent for me and read that quote.
It's the same, but it's different. Hold on. No, because that's not her quote.
Yeah, that's her quote.
No.
It's like when you buy a fine... That's her quote, you have to read that.
It's the same, but it's different. It's like when you buy a fine rum or BlackBerry on iPhone. They have a different price.
It's my favorite lie. She said, it's the same, but it's different. It's like when you buy a fine rum or a BlackBerry or an iPhone. They have a different price. I love this woman.
You're rich if you got an iPhone in her country.
She's that the fact that she is equating herself. She goes, what I do is not like cricket. It's not like Metro PCS. It's like iPhone. I iPhone BlackBerry Those hookers in the street, they Metro PCS. They creak it. They,
A prostitute, they, a prostitute, a Boost Mobile.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, they, they're the Obama phone.
Oh, my God.
I'm Blackberry.
With the Obama phone, you can buy my service with Foodstamp.
Yeah, exactly. You don't buy me with Foodstamp. You don't make, when you buy me Blackberry, you make 2-year commitment.
with the EVP.
It's disgusting.
You guys are awful.
The fact that this guy would get caught, that all of these guys.
Hold on, wait a minute. JC, did you just say you guys are awful?
You are.
Yeah, he's worse
yeah,
than us.
Okay, we're awful, and we're awful, but you were the one saying that the Spanish people were at the voting centers in Connecticut like they were giving out VP cards.
Yes, exactly.
You're the one that said that.
Yeah.
I plead the fifth. I don't know what you're saying. I just joined the crew.
Okay, right. So you're all following now.
But I still think it's a great story. I have to credit the New York Times.
The newest member of the Black Panther Party.
One of the most salacious angles of the story. I want to know who the editor is who goes up there and goes, hey, listen.
I want the audio.
Get out there and see if you can find one of these prostitutes. Because that's what I would have done. That's, if anybody remembers my WRKO days.
Of course, though, they have to have both sides. You know,
oh, yeah. I totally agree with that. But if anybody remembers my WRKO days, when Elliot Spitzer got caught in New York in that hooker scandal, everybody wanted to talk about whether or not it was okay to see a prostitute, whether or not prostitution was okay. And everybody was making – and I listened to that all over the place. The first thing that I asked when I started my show at 10 o'clock in the morning was, I said, everybody, get off the phone. I don't want to talk about prostitutes. I said, I don't want to talk about prostitutes. I don't want to talk about your experience with prostitutes. The only phone call I want is from a prostitute, someone who's worked in the business. That's the only thing that I want to hear from. So I totally appreciate where the New York Times went with this, because it was smart of them to say, look, I need their aspect. What was it that you went through? And by the way, in the Elliot Spitzer story, I actually did get a call girl on the phone, a girl who used to be a call girl, and she talked about how she got into it. She said she actually had clients. She was a call girl because, you know, she had a clientele. She said she got into it because her girlfriend who lived in Atlanta talked her into it when they went to Vegas and they saw hookers walking down the street. Her friend said, I think I can do that. She goes, right now we're just having sex with guys for nothing. She goes, I might as well give up my body and make some money off of it. She said, but her friend didn't want to be a call girl. She wanted to be a streetwalker. I was riveted. I was like, because I always wonder, how can anybody do that?
If you listen, I mean, every day, women and men and men, women and women,
whatever, yeah,
so, are engaging in sexual activity. I mean, it's happening everywhere.
But is it so casual?
At every moment of the day.
But is it so casual?
The thing is, you're doing it for, I mean, if you can live with that and it not, the reason why people are not prostitutes or not, you know, call girls, streetwalkers, the reason why people that are doing it, men and women both, are because they have conscience. You can't go to sleep at night,
right,
and feel good about yourself, which doesn't, that doesn't degrade you. If you can do that, if that's something that you can do and you can live with and you have no qualms with that and that's how you want to make your living, by all means, do what you got to do.
Yeah, that's, again, this is...
Be responsible. If that's what you want to do and you want to do in a responsible manner, then that is on you. I have no problem with that.
But see, that's what I'm talking about, because maybe it has something to do with my upbringing. I'm not trying to like place any blame or anything, but I believe it has something to do with my upbringing, and maybe it's a... maybe it's a conditioning, but I was always thinking, or under the impression, that when we talk about sex, that you should not or cannot have sex without some sort of affection, like knowing or caring about someone in some way. So you can't pass the threshold into sex without having some sort of affection. And
there
like,
has
I don't,
to be some type of attraction.
Yeah,
something
not
has
just,
to have.
Well, I can have an attraction to a hooker. I mean, if she's dressed in high heel stilettos and a skin tight skirt, and a, you know she's pretty in
I'm
her body,
talking about
I can have
other
that. I can have that lust. No, I'm saying I can exactly. But I can't. I almost feel like the one thing that keeps me away from a hooker is because, or even a call girl or whatever it is. What keeps me away is that, I guess that unfamiliar sort of deal. Like,
but there's
I
a lot of people
you.
Out there that love that. Women,
yeah,
women and men both.
But that's where I have a bigger. That's where I have a bigger.
There are a lot of women that enjoy having sex that have a very high sex drive that enjoy.
But that's
it
where
on.
That's where I have an issue with this. Understand what I'm saying? If I have those sort of, you know, those, I don't know, I want to say fears, but I want to use another word. If I have those issues with that, if that hinders me from having sex with a stranger, what I always thought was that women would had that feeling at a heightened capacity than what I'm thinking, that women would say, oh, I don't want to have a guy, and I'm sorry, and I apologize if I sound too graphic here, but I don't want to have a man, you know, a part of my body, if you get my meaning, that I don't know. I mean, this is somebody who is really invading your space in the most intimate kind of way. I don't think that I could not find, in my mind, it's hard for me to deal with a woman being able to deal with that and not have some sort of diminishing feelings after the fact. Because I'm sorry, I had a one-night stand in my life. And afterwards, I felt guilty because I felt like I'm like, why would I do that? Like I was in sort of a heightened, sort of uninhibited point. I was in my 20s. We met. We were at a bar. It got a little lustful. I didn't know this girl. I barely remembered her name. And, you know, we hooked up. And afterwards, literally, I felt like trash. I mean, I felt like trash. I'll never forget leaving her hotel room. She was living in California. I walked out, and I kind of felt like I did that shame walk out
you
the hotel
the,
room.
The walk of shame.
The walk of shame. I felt really, really awful about it. It was really, for me, it was gross.
Wow.
And I would say to myself, if I'm a man, and I consider myself a man's man, I walked out of there feeling like that. I'm like, imagine what cheaper. By the way, I mean, even when I can't even tell you what I did afterwards. I did a real, real cornball thing afterwards, and I
walked the walk of shame a few times.
I called her afterwards. You know that? Because I felt like
and
it
was. And so what did you say? Did you feel obligated?
Yeah, I felt like if I didn't call her, then I was kind of a scumbag. So I had to call her. I called her hotel room the next day, and I left a message, and I was just kind of like saying, hey, you know, I had a great time last night. I felt like if I had just left it and never said a thing, that I would feel shameful. It's like, oh, man, you just had sex and just walked away. So I kind of felt like having to engage her.
Yeah, I don't know what world you live in.
I was feeling like if I engaged her and I at least let her know that I wasn't some – like that would make me feel better, like I wasn't a scumbag. Hey, I'll call you in the morning. You know, it's sort of like, you know, like I was thinking, you know, is he going to respect me the next morning? So I felt like I was obligated to sort of like say, hey, I do respect you. I really – you know, I really don't do things like that.
I do respect you. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I
kind of
felt it was really to respect myself.
You know,
it was sleazy what I did. It was sleazy to have a one-night stand.
I've had a one night stand.
And, wow, you're really going to reveal this.
And I don't want the guy to call. I mean, if I hook up with you, listen.
Oh,
because
it separates
like,
you from the guilt. If he
No. If I hook up with you. If we're, you know, I was, you know, in my 20s, we were all young, and if I'm hooking up with you, and first of all, if I'm hooking up with you and I just want to hook up with you, I'm probably not going to give you my number, first of all, I'll give you the wrong number.
Really?
Yes. Or, you know, if I get, you know, I don't want you to call me in the morning. If that's what it is, and that's...
So you're just saying, as a woman.
You're probably not going to hook up with somebody the first time you meet them. You're not going to hook up with them. Give them the most precious thing that you can give someone.
There you go. That's my point.
And then end up in a relationship with them.
Well,
This
is why I want to ask you the question. This is why I want to ask you this question. Listen,
you should make that before it happens.
So you can go into this one night stand knowing that you were about to do something so intimate that you, your lust supersedes your conscience in this. You know what I'm saying? It's like
your want, yeah. You
yeah,
just,
like your want and need
your
for
physical,
this sexual physical contact.
Yes, yeah, you
supersedes,
have like this animal. You're probably drinking or whatever. I mean, you know, you're probably drinking. At least in my case, I was drinking most of the time. That is what's happening because there's mass amounts of one night stands going on all over the place.
Okay, I don't know.
But so I, you know, I mean, sex.
Because I believe that's what prostitutes are separating in order for them to get through the day. But I almost feel like every day a piece of their humanity is destroyed. But there are women out there who say that they're fine and they're comfortable with it. And I guess me, for psychological reasons,
well,
I want to understand.
But the reason why you're not okay with it, the bottom line is why you're not okay with it. I mean, you can't expect everybody to feel the way that you feel. You can't expect everybody you know, as closed as you are or as personal as you are, because everybody's not like that. There's exhibitionists all over the place.
Right, yeah.
You know, but it's a social thing. It's a social faux pas. Prostitution is not legal. If you would have grown up seeing that as a legal business, if it was a legalized thing, you would be okay with that. But because we've grown up and been told that prostitution is illegal, it's bad, it's dirty, it's this, people are whores, they're sluts, they're this, they're that. So we're conditioned to think that way. And that's probably why you think of it that way. It's a socialist thing.
I don't know. This is the reason why I'm always trying to understand it. I don't know how
sociology,
women do it.
Sociology 101.
I'm trying to understand it. I don't know. We'll be back. Plenty of news. Don't let the Oval Office like Stone. We'll find out who.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and if you missed the show, you probably missed this little thing that I revealed for the first time since 2007.
I'll give you another example. I've got a crush on a Slurpee. I love Coca-Cola Slurpees. Love them. I'll get the biggest one there is. I don't care how filled my bladder. I'm telling you, I've had four of them in a day, and we're talking about the big 64 ounce. I am in love with a Coca-Cola Slurpee. When I used to live in Fort Lee, New Jersey, I used to walk 7 blocks in New Jersey to get to the 7-Eleven and go get me a Coca-Cola Slurpee. Now, for a little time, back in 2007, I had an official Coke problem.
Okay. Very funny.
Tune in weeknights from 7 to 10 right here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. You never know what I'm going to reveal.
One time racism saved my life, man. I was on a plane. I was coming from overseas, and I don't know how this guy got a machine gun on the plane, but he stood up, man. He said, "Everybody, get on the ground. Nobody look at my face." I started freaking out because he was Chinese. I was like, "Why is he talking like that?" Was screaming and crying. I was the only brother on the plane. Well, I thought I was the only brother. I looked over. There was one other black dude. He was from Nigeria. I looked over at him. He was looking right in my face, man. He didn't say two words to me. He just looked at me. He was like...
He didn't need to talk. I know just what he's talking about. I look right back at him. That's right. So my dudes on the front of the plane seen us. They were like, oh, my God. I think those black guys are going to try to save us. We were just communicating that we understood the situation. We were both seeing the same thing. What we understood was simple. Terrorists don't take black hostages. That's the truth. I have yet to see one of us on the news reading the hostage letters.
They is treating us good. We all chilling and shit. I'd like to give a shout out to Ray Ray and Big Steve and Central Newport.
You're not going to see it. Terrorists are smart. They know what they're doing there, you know. They terrorists. They know it was black people's bad bargaining chips. They called the White House and said, hello? We have got five black... Hello?
Hey, guys, it's Reese on the radio. And are you nervous about calling Reese on the radio with 347-308-8701? That's fine. You can send us an email at reeseontheradio@yahoo.com. We'll take all of your emails and we'll read them on the air. Don't like the show? We'll read it. Like the show? We'll definitely read it. You're indifferent about the show? We'll read it. Whatever it is you've got to say, we'll read it. Just send an email to reeseontheradio@yahoo.com. That's right, reeseontheradio@yahoo.com. Get your comments live on the air. Get your views. Get your position made. Whatever it is that you've got to say, just email us at reeseontheradio@yahoo.com.
In Delaware, the largest growth in population is Indian American, moving from India. You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. The police, I'm not joking.
Radio. It's about 13 minutes to the top of the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com this April 18th. Wild Wednesday it is for news because everything's happening today. I'm breaking up the show in three parts. Every hour is breaking up into three parts. There's just a whole lot of news. Everything is going. Everything's happening. I was stunned when I found out that JC had not heard this story. And I was even more stunned when I found out that Mary hadn't heard this story. But it had to be talked about. And see, I love it when somebody does something malicious, trying to be mean, trying to be cruel, and then it turns around and it bites you right on your ass. Ooh, look at that. The irony.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Does that say escort request? What are you about?
Well, I'm looking for something else.
I thought she was saying that she takes back what she said.
Anyway, no, let me get to this story. So I read this book, Dreams of My Father, written by Barack Obama. And for some odd reason, I didn't remember reading this. And then I heard today that Sean Hannity, who also read the book, he said he didn't remember reading this. And I kept thinking to myself, there's no way that I missed this. The guy said he ate dog? That's right. Barack Obama says that he ate dog. Now, I know he was a kid. And I understand that he was between the ages of 6 and 10. Oh, what the heck is that noise? Shut that dog up!
Sounds like lunch.
And so I couldn't understand what the big deal was. What all of this whole thing was about him eating dog. Barack Obama. But then I found out why it had gained so much attention. It turns out that
how it all started was Mitt Romney has gotten a lot of flack. Presidential candidate Mitt Romney got a lot of flack. Because back in 1983, the family dog, Shane, was tied on to the roof of the Romney's family car for a drive from Boston to Canada. Now, I ain't gonna lie, folks, that is a ride. That's my friend, is a ride. Now, when you hear the story, all you're thinking is that they just strapped old Seamus to the top of the car, maybe with some rope, and tied old Seamus down and just drove with his dog strapped to the hood. Now, when you hear that, it sounds a little malicious. But it turns out the dog was in a kennel, you know, with the air, you know, with the gate in front. And Seamus liked it. Like the wind in his face.
Yeah, the 1% dog carrier.
Yeah, exactly. So dogs liked the wind in their face. So it wasn't anything. It was probably ill-advised to do it.
Well, even if any dumb dog sticks their head in only for a few seconds out on the highway, they stick their face back in. They can't take that wind against their face.
It was definitely probably a bonehead move.
It was a Bush moment.
People can't stop talking about it and stop equating everything that's dumb to Bush. Okay? Now, with all of that being said, it turned out that David Axelrod tweeted a photo of President Obama and Bo in a car with a snide observation. It said, at David Axelrod, how loving owners transport their dogs. Well, the Romney campaign got wind of this tweet by David Axelrod, the former chief of staff of the Obama campaign. I believe he's going to be the chief of staff and the chief of the campaign now. So they shot back. And they looked up Obama's past. And so, in the story, Barack Obama talks about his mother's second husband, Lolo.
Lolo on the dolo.
Great name. It turns out that Obama writes in his book, Dreams of My Father, A Story of Race and Inheritance. With Lolo, I learned how to eat small green chili peppers raw with dinner. Plenty of rice. And away from the dinner table, I was introduced to dog meat. Tough. Snake meat. Tougher. And roasted grasshopper. Crunchy. So, of course, they had to tweet the whole thing back. And they put, the discovery that the president had eaten dog meat propped in rice cracks on Twitter with the hashtag Obama dog recipes. And then he tweeted back a picture of Barack Obama with Bo, and it read, in hindsight, a chilling photo.
I wonder what he had. Yorkshire Terrier pudding?
I don't know. But the fact that he's eating dog meat, really, really, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't beg any other question. For me, personally, is
a hot dog?
Would you do it again?
Probably not. I mean,
come on. Didn't describe the texture. Are you kidding me?
Well, I ate bear meat. Does that make me?
I ate snake before.
I've never eaten snake.
It's tough. It's like roast beef.
Well, I mean, Lolo is from like Indonesia or something, and I think dog meat is like a delicacy there, but I think that it's illegal here. It's illegal. Isn't it illegal to kill a dog?
I think it would be illegal to do something of
this
sort.
Not regulated. That's not FDA regulated.
Where is that dog?
It's coming from the left.
Anyway.
Catch him. It's like a
meaty. Get back on that bed of rice.
Well, you know, I tweeted a joke today. Since everybody else was getting up on the bandwagon, I had to tweet a joke today. I didn't get a really, really great response. So the joke that I wrote was, and JC didn't get the joke because he hadn't heard the story. I said, when Obama was in school, he was asked by the teacher, what sound does a dog make? And Obama replied, before or after dinner. Which is so freaking hilarious.
Indonesia, huh?
Yeah, Indonesia.
I wonder if they had sweet and sour shih tzu.
I swear to God, I almost spit up. Sweet and sour shih tzu.
Spuds and Spuds McKenzie.
This could go on forever. That's just awful. Well, you know, like I said, David Axelrod, you started it, and you got to be now prepared. Actually, I heard something very, very funny. They said, you know, that the fact that Michelle Obama is running around on this eating healthy campaign, we're wondering if now Obama was going to come out and talk about the nutritional value in dog meat. Just to say.
Not only that, but not eating fat dogs. I'd be if I was a greyhound, I'd be scared shitless.
Wow.
Because they're lean.
Excuse me.
Do you know that from experience there?
What's that?
Eating greyhound.
No, they don't have much meat on them.
Have a lot of meat on them.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm stunned that anybody missed this. That he ate dog. And why would you admit it?
I'm stunned Axelrod missed it.
Yeah, you think? Yeah, exactly. You'd think he was probably a lot more astute than that to even, you know. But again, it's another stupid attempt by the Obamas and the Obama campaign to try to find every little silly thing to try to mock Romney about. Now they've got to let it go.
I wonder how that Bill Blass loafer tastes.
I'm so glad you mentioned PETA. It turns out that PETA did respond to the story. And PETA said, they responded. PETA,
Obama, you in trouble.
No, actually, he's not. PETA, of course, PETA, look, PETA's not going to go after the Obama campaign. PETA actually said that they gave Obama a pass because he was a child and he was made to eat it, but they said who they're really angry at is Obama's mother and stepfather. And they said that they should know better. So, they're actually putting the blame on the parents for making it.
For eating a pet.
Obama is made to look like
for eating a pet, right?
So it's Mom's and Lolo's.
Yeah, it's Ann and Lolo's problem.
Well, I mean, in Jamaica, you can play with your goat first thing in the morning and then have them for dinner.
But goat's different. I mean, come on. I mean, are you kidding
me? It's a pet.
Yeah, but it's not a domestic pet.
Yeah, and, you know,
I had this Spanish lady live next door to me when I lived in Bellevue Square, which is a project in Hartford.
No kidding.
And I remember she beat the crap out of her daughter because she called herself giving a chicken a bath in the toilet and drowned it.
Really?
Well, edible after that, yeah.
This was in America?
Yeah.
They were bathing a chicken?
In a toilet?
The daughter gave the chicken a bath in the toilet and drowned it.
Did she flush
it? In fact, the little, this happened, of course, when we were kids. But she showed up at the party a couple weekends ago.
How did she get a big chicken in the toilet?
Your guess is as good as mine, but
she
it in the toilet and she drowned it.
How did you
know? Well, she was giving it a bath.
Flush this thing? Did she flush the toilet?
Her name was Carmen. Carmen Rodriguez.
Carmen.
Why did I suspect that?
Papi, let me tell you what your daughter did today.
Baby.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. It's Reese on the Radio. Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. go to yourselves, because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity and all the...
Mary had a little lamb and
Jesus
was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
It's Reese on the Radio, and we're back 1 minute after the hour on blogtalkradio.com, April the 18th, a wacky Wednesday right here on Reese on the Radio. Okay, I don't know whether or not a lot of people remember this, but a couple of months ago, I'm almost certain it was a little over a month ago, I played an ad on the air that shocked a lot of people, and I didn't mean to be that shocked about it, or that shocking about it. But look, the fact of the matter is that President Obama is going to make this election about race. And whoever thought that it was going to be so obvious. Here's a guy who ran in 2008 and made it extremely obvious that, you know, we need to unite. This is not blue states. It's not red states. It's the United States. And we need to bring everybody together and hope and change. And that now has been completely drawn. Because, you know, here was the whole thing. It's like, look, we need to be an America that unites, and we have to, you know, be able to get past our color barriers and all that other stuff. You know, look, listen to what Michelle Obama said when she said, for the first time in my adult life, I'm proud of my country. She may have not been proud of her country in the past, but the reason why she was proud of her country today was because America had decided that her president, a black man, could be the Democratic nominee. So she was extremely proud. It doesn't matter whether or not she wasn't proud in the past. What was important is that she was proud of her country today because she had obviously seen that what it is that she believed all of her life about the prejudices of black people were finally over. That this country could see her husband, a black man with a funny name, as he says, could elect him as the Democratic nominee. That's what it was. So we had finally broken through the color barrier. Then the guy gets elected. He fails miserably. People start screaming that the criticism of him is racist. And instead of staying on that platform that he was on in the 2008 election cycle, he's now joined in the chorus. You may remember this ad that we played right here on Reese on the Radio.
This month, we're announcing the 2012 launch of African Americans for Obama. And I don't think there's a better time than African American History Month to consider the tremendous progress we've made through the sacrifices of so many, or a better time to commit to meeting the very real challenges we face right now. Every day, I think of the generations of African American men and women who overcame slavery and oppression, risked their own safety to cast a ballot, even gave up their lives to help build a country that lived up to its founding principles. Their extraordinary hope, their unwavering determination, changed this country. Their efforts made it possible for somebody like me to be here today. This is another moment where we've got to decide what kind of country we want to be. We can either settle for a country where a shrinking number of people do really well, or we can build a nation where everybody gets a fair shot, everybody does their fair share, and everybody plays by the same rules. This campaign is powered by folks at every level, taking ownership where it matters most. Around the kitchen table, in barbershops and beauty salons, in your faith community, at work, or at school. And of course, in the voting booth this election day. Because we are greater together than we can ever be on our own. Visit AfricanAmericans.BarackObama.com for more information about all the ways you can get involved. From attending HBCU organizing workshops to becoming a congregation captain. And say you're ready to keep making history. Thanks, and see you out there.
So there it was. African Americans for Barack Obama. Now, I would have thought that would have been enough. I mean, because of the fact that he did it on during Black History Month. Okay, yeah, okay, fine. And it's like, all right, it was subtle. You know, it was more subtle, more than subtle. It was pretty obvious, okay? Look, he's losing a little bit of a black vote, so he needed to pander to those people. And then he released this.
The stories of the Latino community are stories about the American dream. Young people who believe that anything is possible, and parents and grandparents working hard to give their children the chance to succeed. That determination has made the Latino community a driving force behind our economic recovery. It's led Hispanic Americans to start small businesses at 3 times the national average, creating thousands of jobs in cities and towns across America. But our work isn't finished until everyone can afford the pillars of that dream: a good education for our kids and quality health care for our families. We're not done until we fix our broken immigration system to keep families together and make sure people who were brought here as children have a chance to earn their citizenship. The choice our country makes in November will have huge consequences for the Latino community. But remember, the outcome of this election is in your hands. Visit latinos.barackobama.com to get involved today. Because we are greater together. Estamos unidos.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he
said,
did.
Visit Latinos for Barack Obama.
Yes,
because we are better together than we are apart.
Now, wait a
Estamos
minute.
Estamos unidos.
Wait. Now, hold on. Now, I have got to say one thing about both of these ads. When is he going to make one for Asians and for Indians?
And for Muslims?
He's
and
got
for
to.
Catholic?
No, no, not for Catholic.
Irish.
No, those people are in mass numbers. He's not going to do that. Whiteys and Catholics, you know, crack a pig honkies, they ain't going to get nothing. They ain't getting nothing. He's already going after African Americans and Latinos. He ain't doing nothing for the honky crack of pigs.
It doesn't matter anyway, because
does he not understand that alienating white voters by going after Latinos and African Americans owned by alienating white voters, that he knows he's going to lose this election?
He has to, and if he doesn't, he's a moron.
Well, of course,
because
he's a moron.
The simple fact is, there's more white people than there are Latinos and blacks combined.
But he does. But again, why would he promote the racial divide as a president of the United States? What other president have you ever heard do such a thing? I mean, there are outreach programs.
You've never heard a president do something like this, because we've only had white presidents. And this is only cool because he's black. People are now going crazy about this because he's black. So he has at some point in time been oppressed in his life because he is black. So
what?
Okay, listen, wait to where I'm going. So of course he's allowed to do that. If it was a white president or a white presidential candidate, if Romney was, you know, rallying up all the white people, like Whitey's visit, you know, Crackers on Ross.
White,
I mean, I don't know.
Whites.mittromney.org.
Yeah, you know. Whitey for Romney.
It would absolutely be.
It would be a problem.
Yeah, it would.
You know what I mean? This would be a problem. This would be a serious issue.
Of course it would be.
It would be a racial outrage.
I understand, but again,
the new Black Panther Party would have something else to talk about now that the Zimmerman case is kind of simmering down.
Look, if I were one of these super PACs, I would blend some of the stuff that he said about these United States. You know, we're not the black states, we're not the blue, I mean, not the red states, not the blue black states, not the red states, not the blue states, we're the United States. I would totally take those sound bites, and then I would play both of these things about Latinos, and he keeps saying the words we. You know, we need to, and what we need to do, and we, you know, we. You're not talking about we, you're talking about you.
Well, is he going to come up with another campaign for whiteys too?
No, of course not.
Yeah, I got a perfect slogan.
Go for it.
Put it on the rich.
Putting on what?
Put it on the rich.
Wait a minute. Put it on the rich?
Put it on the rich.
The rich. The rich cracker.
Putting. What? What?
You don't get
what?
It.
Are Whitey. You calling?
I'm doing, no, campaign slogan for Romney and his,
the campaign slogan for Romney, put it on the Ritz.
Yeah, put it on the Ritz.
Put it on the Ritz cracker.
Just put it on the Ritz.
Yeah, but they
Romney
can figure
dot,
out the rest.
At Romney.org.
At Romney.org.
Oh, man.
Wheat thins are welcome.
Yeah, it's just sad that, you know, how many times do you have to tell this moron, I'm sorry, and this is absolutely the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life, for a president of the United States to think that he had a possibility of winning re-election by separating us as a country and not think that we couldn't see through it.
But he has nowhere else to go. This is his problem. What else does he have left? He has to do something.
I don't
turned away.
Because he can't stand on his word.
Well, yeah, his
he
record
can't
forget
stand
about.
On his record. He can't. So what now he has to stand on his race because he has nothing left.
Yeah. I happen to agree with you. I think that's the last thing he's got.
This is the last straw.
But you know what? Here's a guy who is willing to separate this country by race and by class and by gender, for that matter, in order to get what he wants. And he sounds like a petulant child.
But he's not going to get what he wants. Basically, America has already spoken, in my view.
I agree
November,
with you.
November 4th.
Yeah, I think so as well.
We should
I mean,
playing, oh no, we ain't gonna take it.
No, I think that, look, people are gonna stand up. It doesn't matter because they're gonna be called racist anyway for not supporting him. But I would tell anybody for that matter, man, just, you know, just screw all that crap and just do what it is that you're supposed to do and get rid of this guy. Another piece of information I wanted to talk about using race in order to get what you want. This story came out of Eyewitness News in New York, and I don't know exactly what this scam is, but I want you guys to hear it, and tell me what it is that you think this company is doing in using Barack Obama's name in such a way. Just listen to the story.
Huge crowds lining up around the block in the Bronx, enticed by what they say is an offer of prepaid debit cards if they give up some personal information. Lots of people apparently taken in by this. Investigative reporter Sarah Wallace is here with an Eyewitness News exclusive. Sarah.
Well, Bill and Liz, so many people asking us to investigate after they claim they were promised up to $1,000 in government stimulus money that would be put on prepaid debit cards. Now the bank that issues those cards has issued a warning.
Can you get your boss? Well, I'd like to go talk to your boss.
You can't talk.
The security team outside E&M Multi-Services in the Fordham section of the Bronx didn't want to answer our questions.
I'd like to talk to your boss again.
Sure. Can you want to get online? Get a number, get online.
You can't do that.
And tried to repeatedly block us from talking to customers lined up outside the storefront location that says it's a tax preparation business.
Why are you stopping us from talking to people?
On a recent day, we watched as the chief of security barked crowd control orders and collected copies of Social Security cards and state IDs to take up the back stairs through the 99-cent store. So what's everyone here for? Some didn't want to show their faces.
What did they say about
Obama? They said it was money from Obama. You get $1,000. You know, you sign up and you will get a card.
And they said this was Obama stimulus money?
Yes. I activated the card, and there was nothing there.
Are you giving away $1,000?
I don't know nothing what you're talking about. Get that camera off me.
Ma'am,
give him your Social Security card.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get $1,000.
You get $1,000.
$1,000.
The owner finally appeared.
I'm going to say this once to you, okay? I run an income tax business. Look at my sign right here.
I know some people who've gotten a card that they say that they're getting $1,000 on the card. Are you telling people?
I don't care. Everybody's own individual what they get on their refund, ma'am.
Are you telling everybody they'll get $1,000?
No, ma'am. Do you understand English? I said no.
Did they help you with your tax return?
No.
This customer told us she'd already filed her taxes elsewhere.
I gave him a copy of my benefit card and my Social Security card.
She says she got a card with no money on it. The California bank that issues those cards told us there have been allegations of illegal activity involving debit cards sent to E&M, and the bank has now recorded this warning on its toll-free number.
If you are unable to access your funds and you've received your debit card from E&M Multiservices, First California Bank, the issuer of the card, has frozen your funds while they investigate potentially suspicious activity related to tax refunds.
We went back today to try to ask about the bank's investigation.
Well, the bank says that they're investigating
you. Then I guess you have to ask the bank that question.
I did.
Okay, so then we have that we do what we do here, the bank do what they do there.
It would be pretty easy to correct any rumors, but the tax preparer allows the lines to continue. He says there is no stimulus money, that people only get refunds if they're entitled to them. But it's unclear why people are being asked to hand over all their personal information, which is a very bad idea.
Have you ever heard anything so insane?
First of all, who are these idiots? You can come check this out. Yo, check this out. You can come down here. You can give us your Social Security card. And what else are they asking for?
Anything. Just two forms of ID,
Security card. Yeah, they want your Social Security number. Come down here. Give us your Social Security number.
And they get a bank card.
Give us your card, and you get this bank card from E&M Bank or whatever. And then there's no funds on it.
Yeah, you get $1,000. And you heard the woman said they told us this was Obama money.
Oh, yeah.
Now, but where's the dough?
Apparently, you give up your info, you get this card, you go to activate the card like the woman did. She activated the card, there's no money there. And they're calling themselves a tax preparer service. She said, the woman said she didn't go in there and have any taxes done. She went in there, she gave in her benefit card and her Social Security card. They took a photocopy of it, and she was handed a bank card.
But how were they contacted? They don't cover that.
No. This is just word of mouth, and the line is off the block. You got to see the video. Word of mouth. They're saying, look, go in there and give your Social Security card. They're going to give you a bank card with $1,000 on it. That's what everybody on the line is saying. And every time they try, Sarah Wallace is trying to talk to them, the security guards would tell them, no, you can't do that. No, you can't talk to them. They wouldn't even let them. So they waited for people to leave. They waited around the corner. They talked to these people. And people, I mean, they didn't want to show their face. They just said, yeah, but they said we came up here for some Obama money. I'm trying to
and
figure out
and they were sneaking them in a back door upstairs to a 99-cent store for tax preparations.
Yeah, for tax preparations, but the only thing they were doing was taking copies of their identification and a Social Security card. Now, the only thing that I'm baffled about is what could they be doing with these poor people's Social Security numbers? Because what's the scam?
They ain't gonna find a decent credit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You probably, if they already have horrible credit, these people have benefit cards for crying out loud. So what are they using the Social Security
card?
To get some of that Montel Williams money.
Remember,
you give away
money
if you can prove that you make $800 a month.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I mean, come on. You're giving people a bank card. There's nothing there. But you've given up your ID. Now, I know people are feeling like they didn't lose anything, but your Social Security number?
That's your life.
And I'm trying
if you speak to anybody that's ever been robbed of their identity or there has it's such an intrusion. Imagine having to, you know, go through getting all of that straightened out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, but what could you be using? Because the only thing that I could think as far as identity theft is concerned, either for fake visas, fake, you know, somebody trying to get into the country illegally, using the names of people that, you know, that no one would check on a terrorist list, or somebody you wouldn't check, to, you know, trying to get illegally into the country for other reasons. You know, dealing with some other foreign faction of some sort. And I'm not just saying, you know, I'm not trying to implicate terrorism, but I'm implicating something.
Why not?
Yes, of course, that could be a part of it, but I'm saying that the only thing that I could think of with somebody's ID on that level, Social Security card numbers, is you're using somebody's name. It's got to be something it involves visas, passports, something along that line. It's got to be illegal identification used for somebody trying to get into the country.
Well, look,
that's
at
the only thing I can think
of. Business.
Well, the owner of the business is a Jewish guy. Now, he's a Jewish guy.
Jewish? He's all Arabic to me.
No, no. If you listen, actually, if you listen to his voice, it sounds like Michael Rapaport, the white actor. I'm trying to think of the most famous role. He played the what do you call it? The Aryan guy who shoots everybody down at the end of the John Singleton movie Higher Learning.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Michael Rapaport. He sounds like
redhead kid.
Exactly. And he's out there screaming, no, no, I'm not getting... But he's saying, no, he's not doing that, but everybody's walking out with these bank cards.
Okay, but was there a video to this?
Oh, yeah, man, you can check it out. I mean...
So you saw the owner, because to me, he sounded...
He's a tall Jewish guy, relatively young, looks like he's somewhere in his mid to early 30s. And all of the security guards that he has out there are just literally like average Joes.
And like, why would you even need security if this is a tax preparation service?
Yeah, what are they standing outside?
Why you have security? This ain't the club. You got
bouncers. Not only that, but he did it under the guise of a potential platinum EBT card. Like, they were going to be giving away platinum EBT cards, and folks lined up for it like, wow.
But, yeah, but they're getting, you know, the whole idea was you call up and you activate the card. She said, one woman said she called up, she got nothing. Another woman's calling up, she said she got nothing.
But there has to be more to it. And I say there has to be more to it because why would the bank put up the notice that they've frozen the funds? What is that all about?
Because, I'm really, really curious what this investigation is going to
be. The cards have got to be stolen or something.
Well, it turns out that the bank did send these bank cards to the company.
Yeah.
To E&M. And now they say that the bank is now investigating what it is that he's doing with the cards. But I'm trying to figure out, like, what? He's got something on the side going on. I mean, it's clearly nefarious.
Well,
but...
obviously. I mean, I'll be, waiting, of course, to hear the...
I want to hear what the results are of this investigation, because what would you need these poor people's Social Security card number for other than some sort of identification fraud? I mean, it just screams of that. And I'm dying to figure out what exactly it is. It intrigues the hell out of me. But, there's been nothing, no follow-up as of yet. You know, and of course, when the story does come out, I will... I have no choice but to look this thing up, which I'm going to try to do. Anyway, we'll take a break. We've got a whole bunch of other stuff and so much news today. We'll talk about it when we come back. It's Resona Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Resona Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey, guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese. I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something. You're being honest.
Hey, Reese, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekday here on blogtalkradio.com.
Exciting things are happening at Burger King.
Welcome to Burger King.
What's in those new chicken snack wraps?
What's in the new
chicken
snack
wraps?
Mary?
Crispy chicken, fresh lettuce, three cheeses, fresh dressing, wrapped up in a tasty flour tortilla. Crispy chicken, wrapped up in a...
The new chicken snack wraps. Come and get it.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the radio. And let me tell you something. Nothing makes my job more perfect than interacting with you, the listeners of the Reese on the Radio show. Eric, you're on with Reese.
Hey, first of all, I want to say that you are very refreshing, my friend.
Thank you, Eric.
I do think there's too much emphasis on the race card.
Sure.
I'm sick of people who want to be treated exactly like everybody else as long as we recognize that they're different.
Yes, that's it. Chris, you're on with Reese.
Yes, hi, Reese. I just had to rebuff that guy that called you and said your arguments were weak.
Sure.
He's basing his vote on something you said, and
he's talking about my arguments weak,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, what a hypocrite. Well, I hope he's still listening. Buddy, you're a hypocrite. You shouldn't even be allowed to vote.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. Steve, you're on with Reese.
Hey, Reese, I got to compliment you. You were wonderful handling that guy who was going to base his whole decision on something you said, which you handled it well. I think you just sealed the deal with the listeners, and you're doing a wonderful job. That's all I wanted to say.
Steve, thank you very, very much, and I appreciate that. It's Reese on the Radio right here, 8 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. At uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton, and Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life in Congress. Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom. Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
If you're not listening to Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com, you've got no idea what you're missing. From the Daily Caller, Mr. Matthew Boyle. Matthew, thank you very much for joining us. I'm glad you took some time out for us.
Great to be here, Reese.
Who do we have on the line?
All right. This is Sean Qualley, National Spokesman for Black Panther Party.
Sean Qualley, thank you very much for contacting us and being on the show. For all the news and the people making news, make sure you check out Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I-L-O-V-E.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. It's Reese on the Radio. We're back. Bottom of the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. Eric just sent me a message. He's boycotting my show. Oh, Eric, I'm disappointed in you. And then after you would say something so awful, he decides to then call me a house Negro. And he used the, you know, my favorite word, nigger. He said, house nigger. Love it. He's mad because I posted the Obama joke. You know, I cannot stand it when people get just so touchy about President Obama. Stop being touchy. You know, George W. Bush failed. You couldn't let it go. You ripped him apart. Anybody told you to stop ripping them apart, you said it was your constitutional right to rip them apart. We rip apart President Obama, all of a sudden you want people silence. Hey, Eric, I apologize that you have to go. You know, good riddance, buddy. That's the best I can tell you. It's not that I don't care that you don't want to agree with me. I would rather you call up or even send me an email and have an honest dialogue. But you can't even do that. You're ill-prepared. You're not prepared to deal with an honest dialogue. So you run. Now, I'm not going to go so far as to call you a coward, but the actions are cowardice. Just engage in dialogue. You can't support one good thing about the guy other than some superficial crap. He's a great father. He's been married to Michelle Obama for 15 years. So what? Passed the health care bill. You never read it. You just know he passed it. And on its face, it sounds good. You don't care that he's a socialist because you're a socialist. The reason why I bring up the socialism thing is because I wanted to hear from this guy in such a way you have no idea. Now, if you were listening to the show yesterday, you know that I did a very, very horrible impersonation of him yesterday. Well, was it yesterday? No, pardon me, 2 days ago. Had to have been Monday. When I was talking about Louis Farrakhan and Louis Farrakhan's comments about, you know, how leaders are going to, people are going to kill their leaders. And JC brought up the fact that Louis Farrakhan had a palatial pad out in Chicago, which doubles as a mosque. And I did an impersonation of this guy who is, I believe, another icon. He's an American icon, even though he lives across the pond. So when I heard this today, I had to do this. So I put this together. If you can't recognize the voice, you'll at least recognize the music. He was on Neil Cavuto's show, I believe on Fox or Fox Business. He was talking about President Obama and socialism. And this is the perfect guy to talk about it. So I gave him a little background music that only he could appreciate. Only he could appreciate this music.
If you remove the monetary supply from the economy and turn it over to politicians and the government to administer, you know that everywhere you turn, be it a bush that costs $300,000 to plant in a road or a GSA conference in Las Vegas, government wastes money. Government cannot run anything efficiently. Government breeds corruption and laziness because it is a we do not care philosophy. It's rich people and it's private enterprise and it's small business owners who go out there and bust their humps to make progress in whatever line of work they're doing. It's in our human nature. But then there's this other group of people who think that the money should be taken away from the go-getters and the do-gooders, because they are not going to do it, and they can't do it, and they won't do it. And for as long as you have a president who is whipping up this racial war and this economic divide, which he's doing quietly, but some of us see through it, you begin to realize that level the playing field is truly socialism.
Who can clearly break down socialism than a guy who hosted a show called Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous? I mean, The guy is a trooper for wealth, and he understands it. And who better to break down the socialism of Barack Obama than good old Robin Leach? So I had to put that backdrop on Robin Leach's monologue on Neil Cavuto's show. Now, JC, come on, give me some credit. That was pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty hot. That was hot.
It's perfect. So Robin Leach has finally come out and just said, look, you guys got to get this together. I mean, the guy pretty much says, you know, Margaret, thank God for Margaret Thatcher coming in and changing what it is that they were doing in England. You know, it's like, if there's anybody who could see socialism, I mean, God, it's from a guy like Robin Leach, who's from England, who knows what socialism looks like, smells like, feels like. I mean, that was the reason why Robin Leach always talked about wealth and how important it was. You weren't jealous of the people he talked about on Lifestyles That Are Rich and Famous. You admired them, and you probably had a little, you know, a little thing is just, I want to live like that too. I was never jealous of the people. I want to drive that Maserati and be, you know, hanging out in Milan, on a palatial pad. You know, I want to do all of those things. Thank God for Robin Leach. He's the perfect advocate for wealth. But I have to give myself credit for that. I had to find that on.
That was absolutely, absolutely awesome.
Absolutely awesome. I love Robin Leach, man. He's like, you know.
Yeah, I do.
He's just one of those.
A little British accent thing.
Yeah, that was the one thing I love about him, too. I just had to do that. Anyway, speaking of socialists, Sarkozy's almost out of here. Hey, you know what? This was actually scary, JC. Did you hear about this? Janet Jackson's case from the 2004 Super Bowl is going back to the Supreme Court.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And this Race. Is odd. This is odd. No, listen to mine. Check this out. The Obama administration is taking the case back to the Supreme Court to uphold the $500,000 fine that Viacom got because of the Janet Jackson Nipplegate issue.
I would think that would be the last thing he'd want to do is to piss off a media company, especially a conglomerate like Viacom, in an election year.
That, according to the story, says that the Obama administration today urged the Supreme Court to review the FCC's decision to fine CBS for Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction during the 2004 Super Bowl. In his petition to the court, Solicitor General Donald Verrilli, Jr., contends that the commission's $550,000 fine for the incident was warranted because the indecency rules cover fleeting nudity. The commission explained that its indecency rules and policies never included a fleeting nudity exception to the indecency liability. In essence, they're saying because she didn't show the entire breast and she had a little thing covering the nipple.
Pasty.
Yeah, the little pasty, exactly. I forget what the term was. Thank you. The FCC's explanation... The FCC's explanation of its own regulatory approach is well supported by the agency prior guidance and decisions, as well as by the common sense distinction between words and images. While the commission's indecency rules at the time made an exception for fleeting expletives, that doesn't mean that a brief flash of nudity falls under that exception. So in other words, if I were to say mother, father, I can get away with it. In other words, giving the impression that it's a fleeting indecency. They know I mean the other word.
Right.
But it doesn't mean I can say mother, father. I can say bull spit instead of the other word. But nudity is not covered under that because I'm only showing part of the nudity. It's that I'm clearly violating the rule in some degree. In other words, I'm in essence trying to show part of the body. Another example, a great example of that is, you know, I think, and I don't know whether or not this would fall under the guidelines, but Do you remember the Red Hot Chili Peppers album? Rolling Stone. Oh, that was on an album cover. But they had a Rolling Stone cover where the front, they were all naked except for a sock covering up their genitalia.
That was Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, yeah. On the cover of Rolling Stone and on the cover of one of their albums.
Right.
Under the guidelines, I believe that would almost fall under this fleeting, fleeting, I guess fleeting nudity? Yeah, fleeting nudity.
Right.
So, you know, if it had been under those guidelines. So I guess what they're really upset about is the fact that, and this is unprecedented, the amount, because I remember when they had this decency rule after the wardrobe malfunction took place, they had warned that if you violated these decency rules by the FCC, that you would get a fine starting at $260,000. If you did it again, it would then raise, and if it happened one more time, that you had to fight for your license to broadcast. So, I don't know what the problem is. I'm pretty sure that CBS can pay this fine.
Okay, now, a good argument for CBS, now that I really, really, really think about it, is that, you know, now that they've switched over from analog television to digital, everybody can pick up CBS stations. You have to have either a converter or go through your cable or dish company in order to get the local channels. Or CBS or any of CBS, ABC or NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, Viacom owns MTV. Let Little Kim parade around with purple pasties for a whole award show.
That's right. She had one pasty, right?
Yeah.
And that was the outfit she wore with
the purple hair.
Right, but who was the Diana Ross
lifted her boob.
Right. I do remember that. And again, another Viacom company.
Yes.
MTV owned, you know, that they own CBS. Was it CBS, Nickelodeon? It's another Viacom company. Oddly enough.
Yeah.
I don't get it. The only reason why, and I don't know why CBS got the fine as opposed to Viacom, because that particular Super Bowl, which was on the CBS network, so I guess in essence, I guess they would be responsible. But Viacom ran that whole Super Bowl. If you remember that whole Super Bowl day, coverage had began as early as 12 noon, and they ran programming up until 6:30 when the Super Bowl began. And they had every network involved with Viacom, Nickelodeon, you know, and all the other networks. They all had a part in the Super Bowl coverage when you watched it all day. I think some of the Nickelodeon TV stars were doing Super Bowl coverage from that particular Super Bowl.
They had events on Nickelodeon that involved Super Bowl and kids. And
right, exactly.
I remember the big blow-up players that they played with. And yeah, I remember that.
Right, the whole thing. Right. In other words, and what I believe CBS should concede is that their involvement with all of this, that Super Bowl, and incorporating Nickelodeon, which is geared towards children, and then having MTV do the halftime show, so in essence, you've lured children to the Super Bowl, if they weren't going to watch it already, and you lured them into this MTV production with Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson, and the woman rips off her top and shows her bare breasts, with a pasty on, you can see, hey, look, man, you know, this would be like being, you know, steering somebody to drugs. You know? You know what I mean? It would be a steering charge. You know, you did everything to incorporate every facet of your viewership to the Super Bowl. No matter what they were into, you were dragging them into this. You know, you have
kids
in Nickelodeon shows because you want that audience. You drag in people who are old enough to remember Janet Jackson when she was, I guess a hot item, and you bring in Justin Timberlake, one of the hottest new artists, and you bring them together to incorporate every possible audience you can, and then you drop a nipple on them. So why are you fighting?
They didn't even drop a nipple, though.
Janet Jackson was 40 years old when that happened. If not, I think she was 38, 39 maybe.
That was a very good 38, 39 nipple.
I don't think so. You had to see the photos that came out of her that were on.
They caught him in mid-jiggle. Come on. Nothing's cute in mid-jiggle.
Yeah, it wasn't. I'm sorry. It's like when she started
dating Sharpay Puppy.
When she started dating Jermaine Dupri, there were those pictures of her naked by the pool that came out.
Right.
It wasn't a pretty.
Very story. Nice.
It wasn't.
That was very nice.
It wasn't one of those. I have to say it wasn't one of her. It wasn't a good side. That much I can.
I don't care if they were ironed out on an iron board, run over with a pressed in a waffle iron. She's Janet Jackson. They're gorgeous.
You're just sick. She's just sick. You just love this woman. I give you credit for loving her, but you're just crazy.
I have no idea how much I love her. The year that she drops down to her knees in one of her dance acts and lands on one of her nipples, then there's a problem.
We'll take a break. We'll be back. It's Reese on the Radio.
Hi, Bill Maher here. Sarah Palin agreed to do commentary at Fox News, which is actually very similar to her day job, talking to a baby with Down syndrome.
Speaking of dumb thoughts,
it's not because they have breasts. It's because they are boobs.
I hope Sarah Palin gets in so that they split the MILF vote.
That's not sexist.
I would like to announce a donation to the Obama Super PAC.
I thought about Malia and Sasha. I want them to be able to speak their mind in a civil and thoughtful way. And I don't want them attacked or called horrible names because they're being good citizens.
I would like to give that PAC $1 million. Sarah Palin, the strange family of inbred weirdos. She fucked Levi over and over until a baby fell out. The Maverick and the Milk. They fined CBS $1 million for Janet Jackson's nipple. Think what they could get for Hillary Clinton's cut. That's not sexist.
All decent folks can agree. The remarks that were made don't have any place in the public discourse.
She is the chair of the Democratic National Committee.
I don't know any woman in America that thinks that being called a slut is funny.
Please welcome Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Being part of a democracy involves argument and disagreements and debate, and there's a way to do it that doesn't involve you being demeaned and insulted.
Speaking of dumb thoughts,
this is a Category 5 moron we have on our hands, and I am unapologetic.
Top 10 highlights of Sarah Palin's trip to New York City. Number 2, bought makeup at Bloomingdale's, update her slutty flight attendant look.
I'm going to try to lead by example.
During the 7th inning, her daughter was knocked up by Alex Rodriguez.
To send a message to all our young people, I'm going to try to lead by example.
Speaking of dumb twats,
Maher decided to help President Obama out and give him a financial boost.
He's donated $1 million.
Last week, I said goodbye to $1 million.
I made a contribution to Obama's Super PAC.
This ends up being a teachable moment.
I wouldn't put anything past this stupid country.
All decent folks can agree. The remarks that were made don't have any place in the public discourse. I'm going to try to lead by example in this situation.
You're seeing a president adopt policies which affect our economy based not upon what's right for the American worker, but instead what's right for their politics. The National Labor Relations Board, now stacked with union stooges selected by the president, says to a free enterprise like Boeing, you can't build a factory in South Carolina because South Carolina is a right-to-work state. That is simply un-American. It's political payback of the worst kind. It is wrong for America, and it is something that will stop under my administration. I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
It's Reese on the Radio, and we're back. 10 minutes to the top of the hour. I wanted to get into this story, and a very, very dear compadre sent me a text, and I am, and actually wanted me to bring this story up. It's somber because in and of itself, it sounds crazy that something like this has happened, but we've heard this story before. It's Reese on the Radio.
right here on blogtalkradio.com. A Texas nurse has been charged with murder for shooting a young mother and kidnapping her three-day-old baby outside of a pediatrician's office today. Verna McCain, who's 30 years old, had recently suffered a miscarriage but did not tell her fiancé about it. She allegedly kidnapped the baby in hopes of passing him off as her own. Police managed to find the unharmed baby after several desperate hours of searching by tracing the suspect's Lexus to a nearby apartment complex. Verna McClain didn't have the baby when she returned home, but told police little Keegan, which is the baby's name, could be found at her sister's house to recover the child who was kidnapped and a mother killed by a stranger with no connection within 5 or 6 hours is as good as police work as you can do, said Lieutenant Dan Morris of the Montgomery County Sheriff Department, speaking to reporters. The part about this story, and again, I'm getting really, really ticked off when people do this. What people aren't explaining in this story is that this was a black woman, a black nurse. That's right, a black nurse who stole the baby from a white woman. Shot and killed her in a parking lot. In a parking lot. And that's the part that baffles the hell out of me. Is that she claims that, you know, she had a miscarriage and she needed a baby to tell her boyfriend. Why would this black woman steal a white baby?
Maybe her boyfriend is white, but still,
wouldn't work either. Steal a white baby, and then shot the woman 7 damn times.
Wow.
In front of her baby, 7 times. Now, my friend who told me about the story, the reason why she was outraged was because the shooting death of Trayvon Martin has gotten so much traction. And everyone wanted to make it a race issue. And she asked me, it's like, where are the Al Sharptons of the world on a story like this? This is a white woman shot in cold blood by this black woman just because she had a miscarriage and had her child kidnapped. And there's no outrage. None. Now, my good friend who sent me the story said something very, very funny. She said, where's our, because she's of a certain persuasion. I'm not going to give her up. She says, where's our Al Sharpton? Which I thought was funny because I know it was clearly tongue in cheek. Where's our Al Sharpton? Well, you know what would happen in the event that somebody started screaming racism. This black woman shot one of ours, and we ain't going to stand for it no more. Oh, can you imagine the outrage? Because the news media would turn this into something vile. And the reason why the news media is not going to cover it on the level that they are or with the racial angle that they are is because they know that they'll be called out for it. You only make it a race issue when the smaller group is the victim. It has to be the minority. The minority must always be the victim because there's no way that a white person in America can be portrayed as a victim. You cannot do it. But yet, this is so heinous. Now, there were several, Fox covered it today. I know there were some other outlets, like the AP, they covered it. They even covered the press conference. Listen to the dynamics of this. This is a woman walking out of a pediatric clinic with their barely born child. And a nurse Oh, did I mention that? This is a nurse. This black woman walks up to her, pulls out a gun, shoots the woman 7 times, and takes the baby and drives off with the car. With all due respect, I'm sorry. This is a little more tragic than Trayvon. If I were to really, really gauge the heinous, is heinousness the right word? Whatever. If I were to gauge this is clearly more horrific than the Trayvon Martin case. And I'm not saying that Trayvon, anyway, I would never even suggest it, so I won't even say it. But okay, you know, but if we were to really, really look at the level of innocence, you know, Trayvon Martin was holding Skittles in an iced tea. This woman was holding her baby. And if I may use the words of Al Sharpton, you can't defend yourself with the 3-day-old baby. 3 weeks. 3-week-old baby. That's all she had in her hand. I'm sorry. Skittles and iced tea, I could do a lot more damage with. Now bust you in the head with a can of iced tea. Full can of iced tea, unopened. You ever see the movie Bad Boys? Sean Penn? Isai Morales?
He'd have a sock in his pocket. Come on.
He didn't have a sock in his pocket. He had a pillowcase filled with soda cans.
I thought he'd put a nut. You're right. A pillowcase. Well, Trayvon still didn't have a pillowcase with him.
But it's still not the mess. You're going to tell me that you can't use a can of iced tea? Come on, that Arizona, man. Come on. That's a big-ass can.
I'm not spilling that Arizona. That's liquid gold.
I don't know what. I don't know where you are. But come on, man.
Gold. Arizona iced tea, the lemon. Oh.
Come on, man. Are you? But let's compare the two, JC. The woman was holding her baby. She deserved to get shot.
What do you have, a BB gun that held Skittles? No. No, I understand that. It's tragic. It's really tragic.
Oh, come on.
I just can't believe
tragic.
A dumb broad would kidnap a white baby.
If you ran a news network, what would be the bigger story? Trayvon Martin or this poor woman?
Oh, Trayvon, obviously.
What?
Would be the bigger story?
Yes, the bigger story.
The one that prolongs me and my time to sell commercial advertising for it. It's about money.
Okay, you're going to tell
nobody,
me...
Nobody gets in the business for feeling
good. You're
going
to tell me that a brand new mother shot 7 times by a crazed nurse and has her baby stolen isn't more headline worthy than Trayvon Martin? I'm sorry.
Nobody thought it was headline worthy until they started making noise about it damn near a month later.
Yeah, I'm not saying...
And nothing was done about
it. If I was going to compare the two, you know for a fact I'm going with this story.
Where you're going.
Trayvon Martin, for me, that's some Spanish dude and some black dude having it out in the street. You know, saying he gets caught once in the chest after an altercation. This story is absolutely tragic.
Well, somebody picked off the delicate flower of the earth and left it on the side of the road, took its petals.
That poor mother got killed. That poor mother got killed by a psychopath. Somebody who intentionally went out there and sought out a woman, killed her, and took her child.
You and your narrative sometime kill me.
Set that woman on fire. I want that woman. You got to inject her. And that's Texas?
Nah, it ain't going to happen.
Oh, hell yes it is.
She should have did it in Connecticut. Hell, yeah, she should have did it in Sanford.
She shouldn't have done it anywhere. What are you talking about?
Oh. Sorry.
Time to go. We'll see you tomorrow. It'll be Thursday. I'll be back. It's Reese on the radio. Talk to you tomorrow.
Peace.
Hey.